day and welcome to the Unisys First Quarter 2015 Results Conference Call. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Niels Christensen, Vice President of Investor Relationships at Unisys Corporation. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Operator. Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us. Earlier today, Unisys released its first quarter 2015 financial results. With us this afternoon to discuss our results are Peter Altabef, our President and CEO, and Janet Haugen, our CFO. Before we begin, I would like to cover a few details. First, today's conference call and the Q&A session are being webcast via the Unisys Investor website. Second, you can find the earnings press release and the presentation slides that we will be using this afternoon to guide our discussion on our investor website. And third, today's presentation, which is complementary to the earnings press release, include some non-GAAP financial measures. These have been provided in an effort to give investors additional information. The non-GAAP measures have been reconciled to the related GAAP measures, and we've provided reconciliations within the presentation. Finally, I'd like to remind you that all forward-looking statements made during this conference call are subject to various risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results to differ materially from expectations. These factors are discussed more fully in the earnings release and in the company's SEC filings. Copies of these SEC reports are available from the SEC and from the Unisys Investor website. Now I'd like to turn the call over to Peter.
Thank you, Niels, and thank you all for joining us today. When I spoke with you in January, shortly after joining Unisys, I shared with you my initial impressions of the company and our priorities for the business going forward. Since that time, I've been working with our leadership team and associates, meeting with clients, and developing an actionable program to drive improved performance and deliver greater shareholder value. I am confident that Unisys' capabilities and potentials, but we must move aggressively to accomplish our goals of achieving competitive margins, enhanced cash flow, and revenue growth. Our actions include an organizational redesign to better address our clients' needs, optimization of our cost structure, and implementation of a go-to-market approach with greater focus on vertical markets and integrated solutions. In the first quarter, our overall revenue grew slightly on a constant currency basis, driven by growth in our U.S. federal business and an increase in technology sales. Our services revenue declined 6%, but was flat in constant currency. The company's overall gross profit margin declined from 17.5% to 16.2%. Profitability in our technology business improved with increases in revenue. However, our services profitability decreased. Services gross margins declined from 15.8% in the first quarter of 2014 to 14.1% this year. This decline was principally the result of startup costs on new multi-year engagements and lower project work. We are taking actions to improve our profitability and competitive positioning, and I'll discuss those in detail shortly. First, let me highlight the steps we have already taken. We have realigned Unisys over the past several months. We have moved to an organization with two core client relationship-focused teams, Enterprise Solutions and U.S. Federal, and two core globally integrated delivery teams, services and technology, all supported by our sales and corporate support teams. This will sharpen roles and increase accountability. Leadership decisions for the two client relationship-focused organizations were made in the first quarter. Ron Frankenfield, who previously led our enterprise services organization, leads Enterprise Solutions. And Vetika Pathy Puveda, who previously served as interim leader of our U.S. federal business, assumed the position on a permanent basis. We have been actively recruiting leaders for both core delivery organizations, and as we announced earlier this month, Neil Gissler, formerly of Accenture, has joined the company to lead our global services team. Neil has an outstanding record of driving growth and cost efficiencies, with deep experience in solution architecting, client IT strategy, enterprise architecture, infrastructure, applications, and consulting services. Neil's organization will also manage Unisys's worldwide network of client service centers, software development centers, and data centers, as well as our work with third-party partners, including large cloud providers. Unisys has tremendous strengths to build on: our solutions portfolio, our global capabilities, our deep capabilities in mission-critical IT, and is well-positioned to serve a consumerized business and government mindset. But to succeed, we must bring innovative, differentiated solutions to our clients' most pressing business and technology problems. The first step in this journey was the reorganization we completed early in the second quarter to align ourselves more closely with our clients and better meet their needs. We are also taking actions to simplify and streamline our sales processes to pursue opportunities more quickly and efficiently. In addition, we are strengthening our client executive function with better tools, training, and more accountability. The next steps include changes in our cost base, our global delivery processes, our go-to-market approach, and our solution offerings. As I communicated in January, we've taken a hard look at every element in our cost base with a view to improving our cost structure and ensuring that we deploy our capital in a targeted manner in order to successfully fund our future. We have begun an initiative to remove management layers in order to make us more nimble while driving cost efficiencies across all our operations. This effort is critical for us to achieve market levels of profitability and to allow us to fund future initiatives. We are committed to driving these cost reductions while we deliver best-in-class services and technology to our clients. We are reducing the cost of labor and SG&A expenses throughout the company. In addition to headcount rationalization, cost reduction opportunities include an improved labor model, both onshore and offshore, aggressive cost management, improvements in how we execute through greater accountability, and reduced redundancy. In connection with these initiatives, Unisys expects to recognize a pre-tax restructuring charge currently estimated at approximately $300 million over the next several quarters. The company expects to reduce worldwide headcount by approximately 8%. As a result of these actions, the company expects to generate annualized savings of approximately $200 million exiting 2016. A more competitive cost structure is a critical element for our growth initiatives, but we must also develop integrated solutions for vertical industry market segments. We will leverage Unisys's intellectual property and talent to deliver more innovative, differentiated solutions for our clients. We will increasingly focus on vertical markets and integrated offering solutions that build on our strengths, offer attractive growth and margin potential, and are a good fit for our capabilities and offerings. As we look to our verticals, it is worth noting some of the successes in the last quarter across a range of industries. Within the public sector, which includes work for local and national governments around the world other than the U.S. federal government, our team expanded the scope of an existing contract with a U.S. state for cloud and infrastructure support services with the inclusion of special-purpose cloud platforms. Unisys also renewed a cloud and infrastructure services engagement with a large European state authority that is responsible for that state's courts and law enforcement processes. In our U.S. federal business, the civilian agency group was selected to compete for task orders to provide a range of information technology products and services under the new Solutions for Enterprise-Wide Procurement 5 contract. This SEP 5 contract has a ceiling value of $20 billion over the next 10 years, and this will be a key contract vehicle through which Unisys can offer civilian agencies solutions such as Stealth, ClearPath Forward, and Edge. Within Homeland Security, our land border integration program for Customs and Border Protection is expanding license plate reader deployments for outbound crossings at 16 new locations across the border between the U.S. and Mexico. Also in our U.S. federal business, the Defense and Intelligence Group won a pilot to integrate stealth with other technologies to provide critical infrastructure with a robust, flexible, and extendable integration solution. This pilot is an important step toward obtaining the government certifications required to sell stealth to other defense clients. Turning to our other industry groups, in financial services, Unisys extended our service desk, data center outsourcing, and technology support services with a large Latin American bank. We also had a number of wins in our commercial group. A leading global consumer packaged goods provider expanded our existing agreement to provide cloud and infrastructure services across multiple new countries. A global pharmaceutical company expanded the scope of its cloud and infrastructure services with Unisys. And a large U.S.-based high-tech company awarded Unisys a contract renewal for global cloud and infrastructure services and expanded the scope to include support for that customer's application environment. As I mentioned earlier, we're also focused on bringing our clients integrated solutions. For example, as we announced in February, we added industry veteran Tom Patterson to lead our integrated security solutions business. We are combining our security services expertise with our engineering capability to offer integrated security solutions, including stealth, to clients worldwide. Our operating model, to be a more nimble, focused, and responsive company, is well positioned to serve our business and government clients. Growing our profits and then revenue will come from successful execution of our strategy. Thank you again for joining us. I look forward to sharing our progress with you throughout the year, and will now turn over the call to Janet to discuss our first quarter results and the financial implications of our cost reduction initiatives. We'll then open the call to questions.
Thanks, Peter. Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us this afternoon. Before discussing the first quarter results, I want to cover some reporting changes we made this quarter. These changes are consistent with changes we have made in how we manage the business. Within our services segment, we have new subsegments that align more closely with our current business focus and are consistent with our new organizational structure. The new categories are cloud and infrastructure services, which is revenue from work we do in the data center and cloud area, technology consulting, and technology-based systems integration projects, as well as global service desk and our global field services. The second is application services, which is revenue from application managed services and application development, maintenance, and support work. And then third, business process outsourcing, which is revenue from the management of client-specific business processes. We have also made a change in certain revenue classifications between services and technology. Historical information has been reclassified to these new categories and is included in the appendix to the presentation accompanying this call. Additionally, these schedules will be available through the Investor Relations section of our website. All of my comments today are based on the new reporting classifications. Please turn to slide 3 for a discussion of our first quarter 2015 financial results. We reported revenue of $721 million in the quarter, which was down 5% year over year, but up 1% on a constant currency basis. I will discuss revenue trends by segment, geography, and industry later in my comments. The major currency fluctuations impacting the year-over-year comparisons are the euro, sterling, Brazilian reais, and the Australian dollar. Based on today's rates, we anticipate currency will have a 10 to 11 percentage point unfavorable impact on revenue comparisons for the second quarter of 2015 compared to the second quarter of 2014. And an unfavorable impact of 7 to 8 percentage points for the full year. Our overall gross profit margin declined from 17.5% in the first quarter of 2014 to 16.2% in the first quarter of 2015. Of the 130 basis point reduction, increased pension expense was responsible for 110 basis points, while the remaining 20 basis points reduction reflected lower services gross margins, partially offset by higher technology gross margins. Operating expenses declined by approximately 4% year-over-year in the first quarter of 2015. Included in the results was an increase of pension expense from $19 million in the first quarter of 2014 to $27 million in the first quarter of 2015 as a result of lower discount rates and changed mortality tables, as we discussed in our year-end earnings call. Excluding the impact of pension expense in both years, we reported break-even non-GAAP pre-tax results for the first quarter 2015 compared to a non-GAAP pre-tax loss of $12 million in the prior year period. We reported a net loss of $43 million in the quarter versus a net loss of $54 million in the year-ago quarter. Our first quarter 2015 diluted loss per common share was 87 cents compared to $1.15 in the year-ago quarter. On a non-GAAP basis, first quarter 2015 diluted loss per common share was 32 cents compared to 74 cents in the year-ago quarter. Slide 4 shows our first quarter 2015 revenue by segment, geography, and industry. From a segment view, services represented 89% of our first quarter 2015 revenue. Services declined 6% year-over-year, but was flat on a constant currency basis. Technology represented 11% of our first quarter 2015 revenue and was up 3% year-over-year. However, as we mentioned on prior calls, quarterly seasonality can vary from year to year, so technology revenue is best measured on an annual basis. And as I said last quarter, we have some strong headwinds on the technology business in 2015. Negative currency pressures continue, and we have lower licenses up for renewal than in a typical year. Looking at the services segment in more detail, cloud and infrastructure is our largest services subsegment and represented 53% of our overall first quarter 2015 revenue. Currency was the most significant driver behind the 10% year-over-year decline. Our next largest subsegment is application services, which was 28% of our overall first quarter 2015 revenue. Our new work at the U.S. Federal Customs and Border Patrol under the BEMS contract was the major contributor to the 3% growth in application services. Business process outsourcing was 8% of our overall first quarter 2015 revenue. BPO revenue declined 12% year over year. All of the operations are outside of the U.S. and Canada, and currency movements caused most of the decline. Moving to geography, U.S. and Canada represented 49% of our overall revenue and grew 9% on the strength of our U.S. federal services revenue. Revenue outside U.S. and Canada represented 51% of our overall first quarter 2015 revenue. All of these regions declined on both a reported and constant currency basis. On a constant currency basis, the largest decline was in Latin America, particularly Brazil, which had significant revenue last year for the work we performed in support of the World Cup. From an industry perspective, we break out our revenue into four groups: commercial, financial services, and two industry groups within government, U.S. federal, and public sector, which includes work for local and national governments around the world other than the U.S. federal government. Based on first quarter 2015 revenue, commercial is our largest industry group, representing 35% of our overall revenue. Revenue from our commercial industry customers declined 7%, but was up slightly on a constant currency basis. Financial services represented 21% of our overall revenue. Revenue from financial services industry customers declined 10%, down 2% in constant currency. Public sector represented 26% of our overall first quarter 2015 revenue and declined 10%, down 3% in constant currency. And U.S. Federal was 18% of our first quarter 2015 revenue and grew by 13% year over year. Moving to discuss our first quarter segment results in more detail, please turn to slide 5. Services gross profit margin decreased year over year to 14.1% from 15.8% in the first quarter of 2014. The services operating margin declined 280 basis points to negative 1.3% in the first quarter of 2015. Our first quarter 2015 services margins were impacted by startup costs on new multi-year engagements as well as lower project work in our existing services accounts. Technology revenue, which accounted for 11% of our total revenue, rose 3% year over year, 13% on a constant currency basis, principally reflecting higher sales of our proprietary software and servers. Technology gross and operating margins improved year over year due to higher sales of our proprietary software and servers. For some comments on services orders, please turn to slide 6. In the first quarter of 2015, our services orders rose year over year, driven by cloud and infrastructure orders, particularly in the U.S. and Canada. We ended the first quarter with $4.5 billion in services backlog. This level of backlog was flat year over year, as reported, but represented an 11% increase on a constant currency basis. Of the services backlog at March 31, 2015, approximately $590 million is expected to convert into second quarter 2015 services revenue. The amount of the revenue in backlog at the start of the quarter is estimated to be between 90 and 95% of our quarterly services revenue for the full quarter. Moving to cash flow, please turn to slide 7. For an overview of our cash flow performance in the quarter. We used $43 million of cash from operations in the first quarter of 2015 compared to $20 million generated in the year-ago quarter. The decline in cash from operations is largely due to lower accounts receivable at the start of the quarter and lower revenue in the quarter, higher net inventory, and higher cash tax payments. Capital expenditures were $58 million in the first quarter of 2015 versus $45 million in the first quarter of 2014. The increase in capital expenditures reflected higher investments in outsourcing assets. For the full year, we anticipate CapEx of $175 to $200 million, which will be down versus last year's CapEx of $213 million. Excluding the impact of pension, Unisys generated adjusted EBITDA of $41 million in the first quarter of 2015 versus $27 million in the prior year period. We had free cash usage of $101 million in the first quarter of 2015 versus free cash usage of $25 million for the same period last year. The increased usage reflected the combined impact of lower operating cash flow and higher capital expenditures. Our free cash flow before pension cash contributions was $62 million for the first quarter of 2015 versus free cash flow of $31 million in the first quarter of 2014. On our last earnings call, Peter discussed the need to look at all elements of our cost base to create a more competitive cost structure and rebalance the company's global skill set to take advantage of growth opportunities. We have done so. And as we announced in our earnings release earlier today, we expect to take a pre-tax charge of approximately $300 million over the next several quarters. We currently expect a reduction in our worldwide headcount of approximately 8%, and we will also be reducing our facilities footprint. These actions are expected to generate annualized savings of approximately $200 million exiting 2016. The cash outlay for these items is expected to occur over the rest of 2015 and 2016, so we do not have an immediate need to fund the full amount of the charge. In addition, Some of the costs are self-funding within a quarter or a relatively short period of time. To the extent we find that the charges we must fund require it, we will avail ourselves of financing available to us in the capital markets. Thank you for your time, and now I'd like to turn the call back over to Peter.
All right, Janet, thank you very much. Niels, I think we should now open up the call.
Our first question comes from James Friedman with Susquehanna.
Hi, Janet, Peter, and Niels. Thanks for taking my questions.
So, Jamie, thanks very much. Go ahead, please.
Okay, so let me start out with, on the cash balance, as we move across the restructuring, what would you anticipate would be the forecasted low of the cash balance, say, at the end of 2015, for starters?
So, Jamie, we have identified the actions, and we are in the process of working the timing of those actions. We have some places where we have freedom of movement and control, and when we do that, in other places we need to have discussions with local works groups and follow certain regulations. So at this point in time, we expect the expenditures to be cash expenditures under the program to be more weighted until late into 2015 and into 2016. But beyond that, this stage it's a bit too early to tell.
And Janet, when you say you would access the capital markets, over the years we've seen you and your offices have a number of different creative strategies for that, convertibles, straight debt. Should we be thinking those this time, or is it more likely weighted towards equity?
At this point in time, we are looking, if we do need to access the capital markets, we'll look at market availability at that time, and as you would expect, we will look at every available option at the time and make the decision then. But we do not have a set decision at this point in time.
Okay, and then, Peter, do you think that it's appropriate to start measuring the company, at least in the restructuring phase, more on the progress of your cost actions and your profitability as opposed to the cadence of the revenue?
I, Jamie, first of all, I think you and the other analysts who follow us are will measure us any way you wish. So I don't necessarily think it's for me to say. I will say, and you saw this in my remarks, that right now we are really focused on taking these costs out and on making sure from a go-forward standpoint we've got the right solutions and the right focus in the right markets. So I do believe that the costs will come out before the revenue will pick up, which is why you heard me a couple of times refer to increased profitability and then increased revenue. It's not that we're not going to focus on the revenue side. We're focusing on the revenue side every day. And kind of the purpose of me beginning to add for you guys flavor about the types of deals we're winning was to tell you we're in the market and we're focused on winning business. At the same time, I think, for us to do long-term what we need from a revenue growth standpoint, we still have some building to do. And that building is going to come, over the next I really expect the building to come over the next 12 months as we really align our solutions going forward.
Okay, that makes sense. And then I just had one housekeeping. So, Janet, you had commented about the year-over-year foreign exchange impact, and I wasn't sure if I heard you right whether that number was positive or negative, but if you could repeat what you said, apropos of the second quarter, I mean.
So, Jamie, my comments were that in the second quarter, based upon rates today, we expected to have a 10 to 11 percentage point unfavorable impact on the revenue comparison. And then
Got it.
7 to 8% unfavorable for the full year.
Okay. All right. Thanks for the update. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Jamie.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, that's star 1 to ask a question. We'll take our next question from Ned Davis with William Smith & Company.
Yes, good afternoon. I wanted to drill down a little bit more on some of this restructuring. First of all, can you characterize it a little more detail? Is it sort of across the board, or is it to move headcount from the U.S. to lower wage cost markets around the world? Can you give a little bit more flavor to it? Because what you're saying is that this is something that has existed in Unisys for quite a while, and you're not looking to have an immediate revenue impact from it, but it's something that is necessary to be competitive. So I'm a little bit kind of in a fog about exactly what this involves.
Ned, this is Peter. Thanks very much for the question. I hope I will lift the fog, but if I don't, give me a follow-up question, please, or okay. At least lift it as much as I can. So, you know, one of the things I mentioned on our last call, which was my first call back in January, was that we were really going to do a deep dive look at our cost basis and cost structure. I wanted to make sure we did that from the bottom up and not from the top down. So we were launching that effort about the time of our analyst call in late January. And so over the past 3 months, you know, what you are seeing on this call is the result of those actions. So we really did a combination of top-down and bottoms-up. Obviously, Janet and I gave out targets to each of the organizations in the company, all of the SG&A units, all of the operating units. You know, what we were targeting from an SG&A standpoint was for this organization right now in our life cycle, kind of the bottom of the top quartile of performance, you know, if you look at the various Hackett surveys and all of those. So that's where we were going. So if you pick 100 random companies in our market and our size, we'd lock in at about 25, so the 25th best. That's really the target we set, especially for all of the SG&A units. That's a substantial move from where we are today. Where our SG&A, as you know, has historically been higher than that. So you're seeing pretty significant cuts with this in the SG&A really across the board in all of our SG&A units. When it comes to the operating units and our delivery units, the cuts are smaller. They're there all across the board, but they're not there to the extent that we wanted to impact, you know, our ability to deliver services. Now, that's just a general view of how we have approached this. And let me give you some more detail. So with particularity around the numbers, and you mentioned labor, the 8% number that we're talking about is a net number. So 8% are the net reduction of headcount. So that is not just simply a question of moving heads from one location to the other. That's a net reduction. So this is a substantive set of actions. So I guess that's my first comment. My second comment is it is global, so it does affect all of our regions, but it does affect some regions more than others. And I think you can see, you know, the time that we're giving ourselves to complete this action and the time we're giving ourselves to get those cost savings, you know, on an annualized basis, you know, by the end of 2016, that's because, you know, a significant amount of the activity here involves countries where we're not entirely free to take this action unilaterally. So, and that goes, you know, again to Jamie's question about cash flow effect of the $300 million, because exactly when these actions will all take place will obviously affect cash flow at any particular time, including, you know, calendar end 2015. Now back to your question about, well, this must have been in existence for a while, so why are you doing it now? I tend not to want to be a historian about how the company performed in the past.
I will tell you, this is not easy stuff, in the sense that, you know, this does, these types of charges, you can see from the cost of the charge, $300 million to take out a net $200 million. That's not an insignificant cost. And I think that, you know, unless the company had determined it was ready to take this charge, it's a very difficult thing to do quarter by quarter, kind of cut by cut. And so I think, you know, with my arrival, we've really decided it is really time to make the structural changes and bite the structural bullet to really make us much more cost competitive from a margin standpoint than we have been before. I do believe that as we do that, we'll be more cost competitive from a growth standpoint. Because once we get our costs in line, it's going to be a lot easier to bid and win new sales work. So, you know, your last comment there was about growth. I do believe this will position us to grow on a profitable basis more quickly going forward. But I do believe that's going to take a while, because it's going to take a while to take these costs out.
Thank you for a very comprehensive answer. It's very helpful. Switching over to this important recent hire, Mr. Gissler, you know, some of us know how Accenture has operated over the years. What's your expectation for what he can accomplish in your services marketing initiative? I mean, what's going to change? You mentioned you want a shorter sales cycle. I think that certainly would be desirable. But what other things do you think are potentials out there for him and the team that he's going to be running?
Yeah, Ned, thanks for that question, too. Let me back up a second. And before I talk about Neil in particular, let me kind of deal with our approach to personnel. So it is really a blended approach. We've got some terrific leaders at Unisys. We have some terrific leaders who have been at Unisys. And as you could see from, you know, my comments, we're very much using those leaders in our go-forward model. At the same time, we are really taking some, you know, outstanding people from the marketplace and bringing them in for really a couple of reasons. You know, one is, as we evolve, we're going to need some talent that we don't necessarily have today. That's particularly true as we really focus on our go-to-market verticals. So you're going to see us, as we go forward, bringing in some people that really have, you know, perhaps some more vertical focus than we've necessarily had in the last few years. But it's also true about some of our capabilities that we have today. So in addition to Neil, you know, we issued a press release about Tom Patterson, who has, you know, a very significant background, most recently at CSC in security. We issued a press release last week about Casey Coleman, who has come in our U.S. federal group, and, you know, she is going to lead our civilian practice and has an outstanding background. And I think you see a lot of press about her. You know, even more recently, we just brought in a gentleman named Eric Hutto, who I had worked with previously at Dell and at Perot Systems, who will work in our enterprise solutions team in the U.S. and Canada. So it's not just Neil. It's a number of really qualified people from really all over the industry. In particular about Neil, and you mentioned Accenture. He had a sterling career of 28 years at Accenture. What we have really done over the past 4 months is we've consolidated our services delivery function. That services delivery function in the past had actually been in multiple different organizations, reporting to multiple direct reports to the CEO. And over the last several months, we've kind of been getting ready for Neil. We've been putting it together. We've been consolidating it. And we did not actually launch that team as a complete independent services delivery unit until 2 weeks ago when Neil arrived. So this is a new approach for Unisys. We expect, frankly, a lot from this new team. Some of it because of Neil,
some of it because of the way we're now organized. We are organized now with a global delivery model to leverage our talent across the board. We expect, one set of unified operating systems for each of our global delivery units. We've also revised and streamlined even how we approach delivery and services. So we created a new cloud and infrastructure team. We've created a new application services team, and we have a BPO group. Those teams did not exist in their current format more than a month ago. Now, getting back to Neil in particular, I expect that he will create replicable global processes beyond what we currently have. I expect that that will increase our quality, increase our ability to report our quality to our clients, which will give our clients more confidence in us and the ability to grow existing business. I think growing same-source sales is a really important part of what Unisys has to do. In my experience, growing same-store sales comes from better reporting to clients and showing clients you're doing a really good job. And I think we have a fair amount of way to go in this company on that. I also believe over time he's going to be able to decrease costs. I think that'll be that is included in our go-to-market, in this action. We are including some of those cost savings. Frankly, I think we're going to get more. And I think we're going to get more on the delivery side than we have in the current, one-time approach that we have showed you. We'll do that, on a current basis. Finally, Neil has been involved in Accenture at a strategic level as well as at a cost delivery level. That includes growing clients. It includes growing, looking strategically across that company on vertical integration, on developing integrated solutions. So I expect Neil to really be a full partner with our other senior executives in really formulating our vertical go-to-market strategy in the future. Obviously, he's only going to be a part of that team, but I think he'll be an important part of that team.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
You're welcome, Ed.
Our next question comes from Brian Jaswali with Raymond James.
Yeah, good afternoon, guys. Peter, it's clear you took a really deep look at the company. Can you maybe talk to us from a strategic standpoint what your thoughts are on potential divestitures in the overall portfolio of the company, as well as how you'll interact with the pension liability going forward?
Yeah. Brian, thank you for the question. Let me try to cover both of those and also cover a little more of the strategy as you referenced. The company has had a pretty active history of divestitures for a long time. I won't say that it has divested everything that it can divest, but, at this point, I think it's what we are going to be doing. Let me put it this way. I think we're going to be less likely to go and sell specific units because, frankly, most of the units we have in this company are really integral to growing it going forward. We do have a couple of joint ventures. I don't necessarily think we will sell those joint ventures, but they're somewhat separate from the operations of the company and somewhat divorced from them. And I think we'll talk more, Brian, going forward about exactly how do those joint ventures fit into the overall future of the company, what you can expect from those in terms of revenue and how they'll play out. So let's just put that aside as a, to come back to you on future calls. With that as the exception, I think what you'll see from us, rather than divestitures, is looking very hard at our business from a profit, margin, and cash flow standpoint. As we make decisions on how to reformulate and really focus on certain verticals, we're not doing it based only on mass. We're not doing it based off what business we have today. We're really doing it based off where are we truly distinctive, Where can we truly drive value for our clients? And I measure value in part by profit margin. You know, what are clients willing to pay, and why is that more than our cost? I will tell you that's an important element that we are driving at the company today. And that will affect how we go forward. And it'll affect, I think, over time, our mix of new business, which I think will change pretty significantly more than just what will we divest. You know, one of the assets of Unisys, and I won't say it's been underutilized before, but I will say that we intend to maximize its utilization, is the intellectual property we have here. You know, you read about a couple of other services companies talking about a software-driven services model going forward. And, you know, in fact, we already have the tools to do that. So, you know, if I just look at some of Unisys, let's take government, for example. So, you know, if we look at our government framework, government makes up a pretty sizable amount of our company. So based off this quarter numbers, government's about 44% of our revenue. That includes 18% at U.S. federal and 26% of what we call public. Just to give you an example of some of the software that we already have that backs up some of our government business. So in what I would consider a subsegment of government called justice and public safety, you know, going to the U.K., our software drives crime investigation technology in 43 different police forces across the U.K., including the Metropolitan Police Force in London. We have our TASPO software, which stands for Targeting and Analysis Systems Program Office, which is part of a bigger group of software framework we have called LIDA, that is targeting at customs and border security facial recognition and other biometric recognition software and services. In fact, our systems are now involved in 98% of the U.S. inbound vehicle traffic at border crossings in the United States. Within social and citizen services, again, as part of government, we've got some very significant software that we use for health and human services, particularly at the state level. And we're processing over 100 million state cases annually in health and human services. In financial services, you see software that we have for mortgage processing and core banking that we do on a global basis around the world. In transportation, Brian, and you know, I don't know how much people know this, 25% of the world's air cargo is processed on Unisys LMS software. And 15 of the top 25 global airlines and more than 200 airlines are using our AirCore reservation system software. And that's before we get to things like the stealth security, which we are in a very focused operation of now in really targeting stealth user applications for financial services, for government, for healthcare and life sciences, and for energy and transportation. So that's just a couple of items. But, you know, as we drive higher margins in our services business, you can expect software to play a significant role, and we have a head start in that. But I wouldn't say that as a company we've necessarily led with that, and that's going to be a change for us.
Great, Peter. Thank you for the detail. That's very helpful. One just quick follow-up. I don't think it's been a surprise to many on the difficult macro and some of the currency headwinds, but maybe on your federal business, is that a business that's turning here? With maybe a more positive budget cycle and maybe some of the positioning and hires that you've brought in, is that a business that we should be fairly optimistic on over the short and intermediate term?
Well, yeah, you know, Brian, it's a good question. The short answer is yes. You know, when I arrived in January, you know, that team I have to tell you, by the time I arrived and sat down with that team, I was impressed by it. The interim leader at the time, Venkatapathy Puveda, you really struck me as somebody who is driving that team in a very focused way. You may know that, you know, he's otherwise known as PV in the commercial marketplace, very well known. He's a three-time winner of the Fed 100 Award, and this year won the Eagle Award, which is kind of the Lifetime Achievement Award for Fed 100. It's a very big deal. I've had an opportunity to meet many of our federal clients and will be meeting more, and that team is very well respected. That said, he's not standing still. Casey's arrival as head of our civilian group is a big deal as well. So, you know, the federal marketplace is one where if you look at the peer group last year, it was a tough, tough environment. And I want to be careful that I don't paint too rosy a picture, because stuff just happens, right? I mean, you get sequestration, you get a ton of issues with respect to recompetes, you get issues with respect to, you know, government requirements for, you know, small, medium businesses. I will tell you, we lost the ability on a not insubstantial government contract this year because it went small, medium business, and we're just not able to recompete on it other than as a relatively modest sub. So I can't tell you that all will always be rosy there, but I can tell you we expect to be fully competitive in the federal marketplace. We expect to win our share of deals, and we expect that share to go up. But it is the federal marketplace, and it's kind of cyclical and lumpy.
Great. Thanks so much for taking my questions.
Yeah, you're welcome, Brian.
That concludes today's question and answer session. At this time, I'll turn the conference back to our speakers for any additional or closing remarks.
Okay. Thank you, operator, very much. I do want to thank everyone for joining the call. As always, Niels, Janet, and I are available to continue the dialogue. And I will say, again, in addition to the slides that Janet provided, you will find on our investor website, a tradition we started last quarter, which is an investor relations snapshot, which provides even more information. And we are continuing to develop that, and we'll have more information there as quarters go by. Other than that, I look forward to speaking with you next quarter. Thanks very much.